dealing with local economic development authorities. You have a welcome to the committee, Senator Saxhog, and you may begin. And do you have a witness here to?
I do, but before that, Mr. Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Okay, does that the amendment get it in a form like it to be a? Why don't we'll have to explain the amendment for us. We can't take a vote on it until we get a quorum,
right.
So tell us what it does.
Mr. Chair, members, this amendment cleans up a reference necessary to the bill and it changes the effective date.
All right, we'll handle that rapidly once we have a. Now, why don't you tell us what the bill does?
Okay, I will. Thank you. Senate File 2806 is a bill that will make some changes in local economic development authorities in regard to conflict of interest. It copies the HRA, State Conflict of Interest Statute. This proposal is brought to me by the City of Grand Rapids. And with me today is Ed Zabinski, President of the Grand Rapids EDA, and he's going to give some brief testimony as to what we'd like to accomplish.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Zabinski, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen and members of the committee. My name is Ed Zabinski of Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to offer a very few words of support for Senate File 2806. I am president of the Grand Rapids Economic Development Authority, a position I have held for 5 years. And my predecessor, I am proud to claim, is your distinguished colleague and our state senator, Tom Saxhog.
Hey.
This bill is necessary, in our opinion, to attract and retain interested and committed volunteers to work on municipal economic development authorities. We're hoping, with this legislation, to provide flexibility for EDAs so that we can manage conflicts of interest in a manner that is modeled after the rules currently governing HRAs in the state of Minnesota. Let me provide just a couple of words of background about the 7-member Grand Rapids EDA. Our members include 2 bankers, an accountant, a social worker, a property manager, a realtor, and a retired business owner. 2 of these 7 are city councilors. The Grand Rapids City Council has a standard process for recruiting volunteers to fill vacancies on the EDA, and frankly, we consider it a moral victory if we have more than one person applying for these vacancies. The council appoints people who presumably have a demonstrated interest in the well-being of our community, but also a passion for economic development. With roughly 8,000 residents in our community, the candidate pool is limited. As passionate as my EDA colleagues and I may be about economic development, the topic frankly doesn't excite everyone. We have to work hard to encourage people to come forward as volunteers. We are really no different than any other community in terms of cultivating an enthusiastic core of volunteers, but being a member of an EDA is frankly more difficult made difficult by the rules governing our participation. We discovered last fall, to our chagrin, that what we thought was standard operating procedure for dealing with perceived conflicts of interest among our members was, in fact, not proper. We were assembling a loan fund to expedite a downtown development project. As our attorneys in the due diligence process reviewed this in some more detail, they discovered that we were, in fact, in violation of the statutes that govern EDA. What we found was that one of our members, who is the manager of a commercial window installing business, could be perceived as benefiting from any projects where a business was installing windows. And as a consequence, he resigned rather than face the penalty of a gross misdemeanor, which is spelled out in statute. At that point, we contacted Senator Saxhog because we were concerned that not only that individual, but others of us on this board would be in potential violation. HRAs have the latitude to deal with conflicts of interest in virtually the way that we would like to proceed. They announce a potential conflict of interest at the beginning of discussion. They abstain from further discussion during the meeting. They abstain from voting. And they are clear about that conflict. The statutes governing EDAs, however, oblige any members with a perception of a conflict to resign or not be appointed. for an entity whose stated purpose is job creation and tax-based development, many people with the right skill sets and experience will frankly be effectively prohibited from participating and lending their talents to this effort. Small towns may want for many things, but limiting the people power at our disposal makes our task all the more difficult. Economic development is a very tough job. Please give us the chance to use all the best resources, our people, to do what we can in our communities. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we'd stand for questions.
Thank you. I might announce that we have a quorum, a couple in the back and then about two or three left, but they were here. So there is a quorum present. Senator Day is going to move your amendment to get the bill in the shape that we talked about a little earlier. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. This is a statewide significant bill, right? I mean, it's not just for it came out of Grand Rapids, but it's or out of your EDA, but it affects.
Yeah, we believe that. Mr. Chair, we believe that many local EDAs
are under the same. Sure, I understand that. Discussion on this legislation that has been amended? Senator Tomassoni. Apparently the Judiciary Committee wants to hear it because there's some penalties or Section 1 conflict of interest criminal penalty provision, so they'll have to hear it or they've asked for it. So Senator Tomassoni moves that Senate File 2806, as amended, be recommended to pass and forwarded to the Judiciary Committee. Okay. All those in favor,
aye.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
I guess Senator Bach, I believe, is on his way. Dr. Mulcahy, would you, I was wondering if we should get started on this, Senator Sparks' bill on 3107. We kind of have a tight schedule here, and as long as we're waiting for Mr. Senator Bach, maybe you could tell us about this Senate File 3107 that deals with the University of Minnesota Innovative Technology and Economic Development Research grant program that
Chair Metz and members of the
welcome
committee.
To the committee.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here. I'm Tim Mulcahy. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and I've been here asked to testify on this bill. This bill is not a request from the University of Minnesota, but it's a request that the university endorses and believes is a very important tool in the tool set necessary to help fill all the various gaps there are in needs for the state of Minnesota when it comes to economic development opportunities, and you'll hear others today. This is a program that's based on a program that I was responsible for overseeing while I was the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research Policy at the University of Wisconsin in Madison before coming to Minnesota. It's a grant that provides small seed funding to address very critical funding opportunities for projects that would be of relevance to specific industries or sectors of the economy in the state of Minnesota. Many times these are very short-term opportunities that arise through a convergence of circumstance that are not available for long-term or large funding. The time scale on these are typically so short that the typical process for seeking funding is too long and these opportunities are missed. And the key point here is that this is a program that solicits on a regular basis ideas from researchers at the university and their partners in the community for projects of relevance to business and industry in the state of Minnesota. A key point in this is that, unlike many of the things that we do at the university, which are based and funded primarily on their scientific merit, this program has a very important component, which includes an assessment of the short-term commercial impact of the funding under request. So in addition to being scientifically meritorious, there has to be a clear pathway to commercialization or benefit to a business or industry in the state of Minnesota. I think it's a very important addition to the tool chest that we need in order to move ideas forward. It's typically a more applied research type of opportunity for which the university's traditional funding sources are not particularly available, and so it really is something that I think would benefit the state, and we're happy to support it. The bill basically puts oversight responsibility in my office, and I'd be happy to do that. And as I said, I've had the experience of running a similar program while I was at the University of Wisconsin, been able to see the benefits there, and I think it's a good move for the state.
Sounds to me like a pretty interesting program, but I'm just like everybody else around this building, it's called money, and this calls for $1.5 million over a 2-year period, and that's our challenge. So I suppose we have to go. If we do decide at a policy level that this is a good idea, we'll have to send it off to the Finance Committee to try to find you some money, Senator Sparks. But we've had a ton of good ideas this year. Unfortunately, we're just even some past good ideas we're going to be cutting going forward here. So hate to be talk so pessimistic, but that's the way it's going to be. You have a question, Senator?
Just comment, Mr. Chair. This is difficult because I know that we are in tough times and that we have to look at what we're doing and look at where we might be able to cut. But I think when we look at the future of our economic strength and how important growth is to Minnesota, that these are the kinds of things that we have to be doing, that as we look at the amount of jobs that have left our state because of outsourcing and the amount of manufacturing jobs that we've lost, we know that we can be a leader in this area and that our strength has to be our brain power and our innovation, and that I don't think that we're doing enough at the federal level to fund these kinds of things, and so it's left to the states. And so I hope that we strongly consider finding a way, because it really is our future security.
Well, that's a good point. This is not, if you look at it in the global picture, it's not a cost. It's really an investment to move forward on many creative things. And so we can encourage the Finance Committee going forward to see what we can do in this area. But anybody, any further discussion on the Senator Saltzman?
Yes. And on that same point, Mr. Chair, I think that when we do have these downtimes, that we have to look beyond how do we get through this next year or else 2 years, because we're going to be in this same condition if we don't start investing in these new jobs. And that's the struggle that we have. So, you know, if it's possible to work with our finance chair, who is my esteemed colleague over here.
No, this is actually Pat.
This is, okay. Well, that we need to be able to put together a package and look at it's, you know, and that's, you know, our struggle here is that we hear these fabulous ideas and then it's picking, and to be able to have a coordinated effort to look at where's sort of the business plan for Minnesota and how does this fit into that is very important. So it's always difficult to sit here and think about the what ifs, but I think we absolutely have to.
Chair Parker. Metzen and Senator Saltzman, Senator Bonhoff, I couldn't agree with your comments more. Let me just point out one other thing about this program, because I think it's important to see where it fits within the context of other opportunities that you're already considering. And the point I would make about this is that many times the beneficiaries of this program have been small companies, small industries, sometimes even to the point of individual orchards, for example, who have a critical need and have no recourse as to how to have that need addressed, yet the benefits of their being able to address that problem has an impact on the success of their business, which ultimately in aggregate has an effect on the state of Minnesota. Programs for our large industrial base, for example, would not see a lot of particular benefit from this. So in thinking about how this fits in the context, I think you also need to think about the various sectors of the economy and where we can help. The dollar amount, quite frankly, although I recognize your challenge, is not a huge, significant investment in terms of actual dollars. But for the individuals who would benefit from access to this kind of a program, I think it would be viewed as a huge asset. And as a university, we're looking forward to the ability to partner with them to help them succeed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tabassoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Okay. First question is, why do we need enabling legislation? Can't the university just do this if they want to? And secondly, if we do need enabling legislation, could the university find the money without us giving it to them?
No. Now, Senator Tomasoni, let me try to address that question. A lot of the resources that the university has with regard to supporting its research mission is all designated for specific purpose. We do $600 million worth of research at the university a year, and every dollar of that is actually committed to specific sponsors and specific projects. So the availability of funding for projects like this is not readily available. Why is it a legislative need? I think I would defer that question to the authors of the bill. But I can tell you this was a legislative appropriation at the state of Wisconsin, and this was modeled very much on that approach, and I think that's the approach here. If there is not dedicated funds set aside for this, then there's always some other priority that gets in the way. And as you are confronted with the need to address a lot of competing priorities, all of which have great merit, the same thing happens in the university. And the question is, sometimes programs like this just fall below that critical priority level and they get nudged out by others. So by appropriating a specific fund designated precisely to this cause, then it helps to preserve that funding opportunity for situations that match the criteria.
Excuse me, how much was that budget for the U in this area, the total budget that does not include this?
$600 million a year.
It'd be hard to find $1.5 million, I'm sure.
Well, like I said, money comes from federal sources or corporate sponsors who come in and say, we're providing you the resources to do this specific research, and we do not have the ability to say we're going to accept money from the federal government.
Well, we do around here,
something
doctors.
Else.
We'll give an assignment to some commissioner, and they get this. We ask them to do something, more. They say, "Oh, we need four more people." Well, you've got 980. Could you do the assignment without four new people? Oh, probably. But they couldn't do this $1.5 million because it's. I know they're autonomous too. So sometimes you think that they could find money, but apparently they can't on this one. Senator Bonnef, did you have a? Because this is good stuff. This could really leverage a lot of activity out there. And,
that's correct.
And it's a small investment, for what we could get. But there you go. I guess, Senator Sparks, that was the best presentation you've ever made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should do that more often. Actually, I did have to apologize.
You stay lost.
I stepped outside.
Obviously, you endorse this wholeheartedly because it's your bill. And
yeah,
you got a wonderful co-author.
Say hi to I do have a nice co-author on it. Some folks from ARP that drove up for us in Albert Lea. I apologize for
that.
But
fine.
I would echo what Senator Bonnef and Senator Saltzman said. Really, if we're looking at some ways to leverage some dollars, and this research and development investments could really spur future growth in our economy. So I know that we're facing some challenges, and we're going to have to try to come up with some money. But at least we'll throw it out there this year, and if we can't, we'll come back next year and work hard on the same legislation.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'm only upset that Senator Sparks didn't add me to the bill, too.
Well, we could do that on the floor.
So would you do that, please? Thank you.
Senator Saltzman wants to get on, and so does Bonham.
Thank you for speaking for me.
But no Republicans have. I would get a second bill drafted to
some
do the same
say
thing.
You have
all right, I think that's...
Just another comment, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Senator you know, Saltzman.
What is also disturbing is that we look at this as we can't do this, and then we hear about other states that are. And we've heard that at our testimony at the Science Museum with the Life Science Alley exhibits that... you know, if we have the brain trust here, people are coming here just sucking these ideas out of our state. So there is an issue there as well, that there is a cost if we don't do these kind of things. And I don't have the source of dollars, unfortunately, to do this, but I think that we need to continue to just be aware of that and however we can help.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman.
Maybe you have to lobby some of the Board of Regents or something. I don't know. I know somebody on the board there, but... No, I didn't mean to be smart aleck about it, but when you have these billion-dollar budgets and you got a good program for $1 million, I guess I don't always understand whether you can't find a... And in the big picture in life, this is small potatoes, but I'm editorializing. Okay, that's enough of that. We move the bill. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 3107 be recommended to pass and sent to the Higher Ed
Finance
Committee. I'm sorry, Finance
Committee. Yeah, Finance, and I think they ship it down. Is that how it works, Senator Thomas Honey? On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails. No votes. Senator Sparks, do you want to take... Senate File 3109 at this time.
Sure.
Strategic Entrepreneurial Economic Development Implementation and Appropriations Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 3109, which is the Strategic Entrepreneurial Economic Development, otherwise known as the SEED Initiative. Small companies are the lifeblood of Minnesota economy, particularly in greater Minnesota. Companies with fewer than 100 workers account for 97% of the state's businesses, 53% of the employment, and generate the most new jobs. This initiative includes 22 individual tactics that businesses and communities can engage in a variety of ways depending upon their own challenges and opportunities. SEED is not a one-size-fits-all approach to business and community development. SEED employs three key strategies to achieve these goals:
yes,
developing and growing entrepreneurs, new capital and rural business to help grow businesses and encourage investment in greater Minnesota, and lastly, Mr. Chair and members, to help rural Minnesota gain a competitive advantage by building its community infrastructure and marketing its asset. The nation and the state are facing economic uncertainty. It is important to invest in our programs like SEED that develop leaders, build tomorrow's businesses, and strengthen our communities. Minnesota depends on the strength of its entire economy. With me today, Mr. Chair, is the Commissioner McElroy, who's been around the entire state discussing this. I went to a meeting in Albert Lea where he brought out the proposal or rolled it out, and I know he's been around the entire state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn it over to the Commissioner to walk you through the bill.
Yeah, Commissioner McElroy, welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Dan McElroy, the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Mr. Chairman, if I could, I wonder, there are a number of people here from the Economic Development Association of Minnesota and the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. Could I ask the economic developers for, just for a show of hands, or who are here on that
Good.
Issue? Thank you.
Good. Thanks for coming.
And we're hoping to have time for two of them to testify, Glenn Thuringer from Worthington and Nancy Hoffman from Benton County. So I will be brief and walk through the bill. Section 1 defines targeted rural opportunity communities, and those are cities or townships located in counties that have had declining population or above-average unemployment. And there are 64 counties that meet that qualification around the state. And as Senator Spark indicated, there are 22 tactics in the proposal that support three strategies: helping entrepreneurs, inventors, small micro businesses, and small businesses grow, providing greater access to capital, and providing help to communities to provide infrastructure. The proposal's in two parts: a general fund section that you're seeing today, there really are three sections. A bonding proposal that's been heard by the bonding bill and is substantially included in the Senate bonding bill, and a tax proposal that's in a separate bill going through the tax committee. The Section 2 of the bill creates a rural enterprise microloan fund. As Senator Spark indicated, very small businesses create a disproportionate number of jobs. We've had a microloan fund in the metro area called the Urban Initiative Fund for about 15 years. We'd like to create a similar fund working through partners around Greater Minnesota. Section 3 creates the Office of Technology and Commercialization, principally designed to assist companies in applying for federal research dollars through a program, federal program called Small Business Innovative Research. Section 4 codifies a reorganization that we have done at DEED to reorganize into an Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development. Section 5 amends the statute to fold the former Small Business Assistance Office into the Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development to streamline that effort so we're better structured to help very small business. Section 6 provides a small business product development program. This idea came from the Natural Resources Research Institute in Coleraine from Mike Lalich. It brings back an idea from the 1970s that was discontinued in 1981 during a budget challenge, but it has some similarities to the proposal in Senator Spark's other bill, but is more geared at the applied research to assist companies in doing patent models, proof of concept models, perhaps patent drawings, prototypes, and it's envisioned as a scholarship that needs to be matched 50-50 with non-state funds. Section 7 creates a new program available only in the targeted rural opportunity counties called Main Street Minnesota Revitalization Grants to assist in rehabilitating downtowns that don't look the way that we would like them to or the way we may remember them. Section 8 creates a community leadership and planning program. It's intended to partner with the initiative foundations, the Blandon Foundation, the Northwest Area Foundation, the Knight Family Foundation, and others in assisting small communities both to train creative, future-oriented leadership and to engage in community, what we call prosperity planning, kind of comprehensive plans for more prosperous communities. Sections 9 and 10 will assist small business improve employee skills and increase productivity through partnerships with accredited training providers. It would be operated through our workforce service areas and be very similar to Job Skills Partnership Program to increase job training to make an investment in human capital across Greater Minnesota. Section 11 makes an additional investment in our small business development centers. We currently have 9 small business development centers, 8 of them in Greater Minnesota and 1 in the metro area, that provide counseling, assistance with business plans and cash flow plans and applications for small business administration loans. They provide tens of thousands of counseling hours each year. We have been underinvesting. We're proposing an additional investment in that program, more help, but more counseling hours, but probably not more centers. Section 12 proposes to create an entrepreneurial network similar to networks that we've observed in states like Wisconsin and Canada, Kansas and North Carolina. It might be a little like Junior Achievement for Big People, but it's based on the assumption that entrepreneurs are willing and like to mentor and help each other, and we need just a little capital to organize that and get it going. Section 13 is additional funds to support assistance to entrepreneurs. It funds the office that we created in an earlier section to help with the small business innovative research. Section 14, Manufacturing Extension Grants, provides additional resources to organizations like NRRI, the Natural Resources Research Institute, AURI, and the Centers of Excellence at MinSCU to help manufacturing and keep manufacturing jobs in Minnesota. We've lost about 3.5 million manufacturing jobs in the United States since 2000. Interestingly, China has lost 20 million manufacturing jobs since 2000, not to other locations, but to increase productivity. We need to increase the efficiency of our manufacturers, and they're excited about this idea. The Minnesota Trade Office has provided assistance to exporters for a very long time, but all of it in the metro area. We would like to be able to literally take that show on the road to Greater Minnesota and need some resources to do that. Section 16 is the appropriation for Section 2. Section 17 is additional capital for the 6 Minnesota Initiative Foundations. sometimes called the McKnight Foundations because McKnight started them, principally to fund their business revolving loan funds. Section 18 is the appropriation for the small business product development proposal in Section 6. Section 19 is a one-time appropriation to deed for our Minnesota Investment Fund, with which we work with principally city economic developers, but sometimes regional development corporations or county economic developers to assist in the financing of business. There is an important policy change that I want to bring to your attention. Currently, the Minnesota Investment Fund requires that a business be creating additional jobs to qualify for Minnesota Investment Fund loans. We want to change that so the creation of better-paying jobs would also qualify, with an interest in wealth creation in addition to job creation, so that if a company was making investment in technology, that it would allow it to pay more, to employ higher-skilled people, perhaps in combination with a Job Skills Partnership grant to provide job training. We could also use Minnesota Investment Fund to help that manufacturer principally, but company in general, be competitive. Section 20 appropriates the funds for the program described in Section 10. The same in Section 21 appropriates community leadership and planning funds. Section 22 is an idea that came to us from 12 other states that have tried to reduce the cost of economic development infrastructure, of borrowing money for things like streetlights, sewer and water extensions, local streets, in very small communities that may not have their own bond rating, may not borrow money often, may pay very high issuance costs. And we're proposing to create a bond pool where we would bring together issues from very small communities to reduce their issuance costs. Standard & Poor's has written a very favorable research white paper on this issue, and the 12 states that have done this have seen a fair amount of success. The funding for this, I believe, is in the bonding bill, but the policy authorization needs to be in this bill. The Section 23 provides the money for the Main Street Revitalization Grants. Section 24 would enable us to update our web-based marketing program or system for the whole state, but it probably more often used in Greater Minnesota. We have a website called MinPro that is things like community profiles, availability of commercial industrial real estate, a variety of information for prospective economic development across Minnesota. The website's 15 years old, and they tell me that a 15-year-old website is a little like a car that you put a crank in to start. It's pretty obsolete, and we need some updating of that. Section 25 appropriates funds to help our Positively Minnesota Marketing Partnership. Section 26 appropriates funds for labor market enhancements. Labor market information is the research we do to find out where our job openings, what jobs are likely to be available in the future, what careers are needed in the future. And we're requesting funds to continue that work. The governor will have the logical question, if I were on your side of the table, is where the heck does this money come from? And the governor will have a proposal in his supplemental budget that will be out on Friday that will include all or most of his of the SEED initiative. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions, or if possible, I'd love to have our two witnesses. We've asked them to promise for just 2 or 3 minutes each, but to tell you how these programs impact Greater Minnesota.
The total, hopefully, the wishful thinking is like $40 or $60 million total in these areas?
No, Mr. Chairman, $20 million from the general fund. I was asked to comment on the bonding bill. We had requested $50 million in the bonding bill. $20 million for the rural infrastructure program, which helps with things like sewer and water extensions, industrial parks, airport extensions. Senator Langseth put $10 million for that program in the Senate bonding bill. We requested $20 million for the redevelopment fund, which goes half to Greater Minnesota and half to the metro area. Senator Langseth put $10 million in his bill for that program.
That split... rural and urban?
That one split 50% rural, 50% urban.
And no, that's the global thinking here, and first, from me, first of all, this is very important. We got to reach out and help our friends with these investments. But, you know, there's towns like South St. Paul.
Mr. Chairman.
Lost 7,000 jobs about 30 years ago, union packing house towns, or workers, union workers. There's the east side of St. Paul that's been devastated by Schmidt's Brewery and some other things. I'm an advocate for this, and I'm going to vote for it. But I just wondering what programs in North Minneapolis has terrible pockets of problems over there. And I'm parochial, but South St. Paul really has been devastated. And we need help down that way. The east side needs help. And I don't know how we can, if there was a way to include just some areas that are really economically depressed. I had to get that out.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. The about half of our bonding request is available in the metro area. The Bioscience Initiative, we requested $10 million. Much of that goes to areas that have bioscience industries. Senator Langseth included $10 million in the Senate bonding bill for that program. The redevelopment program has probably been the one that's been most helpful to communities like St. Paul and South St. Paul and Columbia Heights and a wide variety of others in putting back to work land that may have been previously used for things like packing houses. We also have a number of existing programs where we work with the City of Minneapolis and the City of St. Paul to clean up polluted sites on the workforce side to assist with job skills training. We had a meeting of the Job Skills Partnership Board in which we, I think, granted about $5 million, much of it to urban programs for workforce development to address those pockets of poverty. This is our tool kits that that help, but they may not be the only toolkit we need, Mr. Chairman.
I was aware of some of those, and we appreciate some of that retraining efforts and the reschooling and what have you. But Senator Scheid first, and then Senator
Well, Mr. Thomas. Chairman, thank you, and you're kind of touching on it. Commissioner, I heard you talk about centers of excellence and the other things that you just said now about training, workforce training, et cetera, and retraining. How much do you collaborate, if you will, with the education community? I'm talking about, well, I'm interested in early education, but we can talk K-12 or K-16. And obviously, if you're talking retraining, you're talking 16-plus. I'm looking at this line because I strongly support what you're trying to accomplish here. There's a line here on the handout, the single-page handout that says, Minnesota depends on the strength of its entire economy. And I think our economy depends on our education. And we know we need to increase productivity. I think you mentioned that before. And I think the best medicine for that is education as well. So I'm wondering if you can just expand on that a little bit for me.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scheid, thank you for that wonderful question. We spend a great deal of time with our friends at Minnesota Department of Education, MinSCU, and increasingly the University of Minnesota, although I will be frank that collaboration is only a few years old and probably should be longer, have a longer history, but we can't go backwards, and they've been most helpful. Since they created the Academic and Community Outreach Center, that's been helpful. Vice President Mulcahy has been helpful. We probably would describe four things. First of all, I do have a seat on the Governor's Education Council that Commissioner Segrin chairs. And in turn, Commissioner Segrin has a seat which she delegates to a deputy commissioner on the Governor's Workforce Development Commission. We just funded a series of grants called FIRST Grants, Framework for Integrative Regional Strategies, using some federal incentive money that we earned. And we made 9 grants around the state, including 1 in the metro area and 8 in greater Minnesota, to facilitate sustainable collaborations between K-12 education, the workforce development system, the economic development system, housing systems. The Twin Cities grantee is focused on the West and Northwest Metro, and it's led by the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, but with the Hennepin County Workforce Development Board and a number of other partners. We also, as you may know, I'm also a trustee of the Minnesota State College and University System, and that's been a helpful collaboration. One collaboration I'm probably most excited about is with adult basic education. Our workforce development group and ABE are really working closely every day, and it is making a big difference. So we agree with you on that collaboration.
Thank you.
Okay, you want to bring up Senator Tomasoni, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Commissioner, this new Office of Entrepreneurship, what's the cost of that? Because as you heard the chairman comment earlier, sometimes people say we need four people to do this, and then they find out that they can get it done with the 980 that they got there already.
The office, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, creating the office itself, we're not asking for additional resources. It is changing some reporting requirements, in part to have better accountability for JobZ. We created an office that supervises JobZ and the Minnesota Investment Fund, and then reorganized the people who did things like small business development centers, our publications for small business, and the small business innovative research. The reason it's in the bill is we needed – there are some statutory references to a previous organization. We would like to get resources to spend more money on small business innovative research, but the office itself doesn't need an additional appropriation.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I understood that, you just said that it's not going to cost anything to create this office. You just need to move some people around and need some enabling legislation.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
That's good to hear once in a while. That's what I talked about an hour ago. But you remembered. You caught on. That's good.
I pay attention to you.
That's good, Senator Bonif.
Thank you.
And then we'll get to your
witnesses. Are Glenn Thuringer from Worthington and Nancy Hoffman from
Benton County. Okay, but before that, we're going to have Senator Bonif has a question.
A comment with regard to Senator Scheid's comment on education. I concur with Senator Scheid, and also your comment, Commissioner, on adult basic education, because as I've been out in the community talking to business leaders, I keep hearing that that might be in our future one of the most important things we can do because of the tremendous job loss that we are experiencing in Minnesota, that we need to do more proactively to retrain these people who have lost their jobs, to put them in a place where they can get back to work and be working in sectors that they may not have considered before. So I would support that collaborative and hope that we continue looking at expanding that. And then I had just a specific question with regard to your geo bonds, because there's an initiative in my community where we have a big corporation, United Health Group, is looking to expand their headquarters. You know, it would make thousands more jobs available, but the particular intersection where they would be housed can't support the traffic. There's been a study done, and they can't expand unless we had the money to expand this interchange. We don't have the money from the state. There's nowhere that money exists, and yet I wonder, would that be a case where they could apply for some of these funds through this process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, potentially yes. Particularly, and we would like to work with them, and we've had a number of meetings with United Health Group, are in the process of trying to assess some options, and we'll continue to work with them. That's an exciting project.
It is. Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Very good. Now we'd like to hear from a couple of the welcome to the Capitol, and you may proceed whoever. And when you speak, identify yourselves for the tape.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Hoffman. I am the Benton County Economic Development Director, but I'm also here to represent a couple other groups. One is EDEM, Economic Development Association of Minnesota. That's an association that's 500 members strong, 500 plus. About one-third of them are economic developers, local and community economic developers. But of those 500, half of them are from the metro area and half of them are from outstate. So we have a great representation. I'm also going to represent MAPSED, which is the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. That's a much smaller group. There's only 42 members, but you have to remember there's probably only 50 county economic developers out there. And both of the associations have included the SEED program, supporting the SEED program, on the legislative platforms. We feel that this is a great way for us to assist our local businesses to grow and prosper and to create jobs in our area. It provides us some new tools that allows us to compete with our neighboring states. So we're really excited to see some new blood put into our programs that are available through the state. I just kind of wanted to mention a few years back we were talking about the Minnesota Investment Fund when we were looking for refinancing of that program. That's probably familiar. It's a loan program that we use to provide to businesses and comes back to grants to the communities. When that program started out, it was called the Economic Recovery Program. It was created at a time where there was a kind of an economic downturn, probably much like we have right now. And the people in power at that time felt that it was important to reinvest in our business, in our businesses, so they created that program. And it's really kind of the same situation at this time. It's really a time to beef up our program so that we can invest in our economy. I did want to make a quick comment in regards to the education. As far as local economic developers, we do have very close ties to our education. I can speak for myself at Benton County on our Economic Development Committee. We have school districts that are represented. And, in fact, yesterday I was at a meeting through our – it's the Stearns Benton Employment and Training. And it the people that were there were the people that run the English as a Second Language program, the adult basic education, the local tech college, the customized training, all those things. And we basically have kind of a roundtable discussion to know what's going on with each other's programs, what are new initiatives, and what are some of our issues. So with that, I know we don't have a lot of time. I'm going to turn it over to Glenn, but on behalf of both of the associations, we really hope that you would support SEED as well.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman.
Committee Chair, committee members, my name is Glenn Thuringer. I'm the manager of Worthington Regional Economic Development Corporation, and I'm also the co-chair of the Southwest Economic Development Professionals, a 14-county organization. Commissioner McElroy did a very nice job of obviously outlining the SEED program. I just want our presence here today to represent our support for that. We really feel that investing in economic development in rural Minnesota is a good investment, and it not only provides a return, but it's a solution to some of the issues that we're facing, the housing and the school issues and so on, that investing in tools of this nature allows us to do our job better and allows us to address these issues and come up with better answers, because we really feel that economic development is part of the solution to all of that. And I'm going to take the same path that Nancy did here. The education really caught my ear as well. I'm going to abandon some of my other comments to address that, if I could, please. In Worthington, we have our community college. We work very closely with the industries, and I'll use the biosciences specifically. A few years back, after we went through a Blandon process, we set up a lab tech training program because that's what the businesses were looking for. And that has been going now for a couple of years, going very strong. We wrote that curriculum in alignment with the juniors and seniors in high school, and there's a very strong connection there. The Economic Development Office came back and said, if the high school, the juniors and seniors are a feeder to the college program, what's the feeder for the juniors and seniors? So the Economic Development Office is funding, we're in our second year, funding a science club at the eighth grade level. Last year, we had 18 students in it. They went out into different businesses, different labs at the college and the private sector, did a lot of experiments. We brought them up to the cities on a tour of Medtronic, where they got to do implants, where doctors from all over the world are coming in and training. They got to do that. It was a great experience for them. We went back for this year. Last spring, the teacher hung a sign-up sheet out for the students. We thought we'd have to encourage, because evidently science was supposed to be kind of a nerdy thing at the time. We had 64 students sign up. And from 18 to 64, we know that getting out and working with the students and giving them an opportunity to get them into businesses works. So we are very much in favor of that. We think that the education piece of this is big, and we will continue to support it. We need additional help to support all of the economic development opportunities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thuringer, and thanks for your work with our young people.
We'll turn it back over to the commissioner.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Schein.
And that's exactly the kind of thing I wanted, you know, to hear. It's so important. Thank both of you for that.
Madam Chair and Senator Scheid, it's interesting that junior high seems to be a place that more and more communities are wanting to start. In Brainerd, they're starting in fifth grade. In Worthington, they're starting in the seventh and eighth grade. And it's little things like companies making factory tours available or company representatives speaking at career days or companies donating materials for various classes and exhibits. One I'm very excited about is that a range program called RAMP, the Range Area Math Project, where range area employers are providing summer jobs to math teachers so they get examples of what is kind of germane and what makes teaching math relevant. When somebody says, why do I need to know decimals or algebra or geometry, some of the math teachers in across northeastern Minnesota, but principally on the range, are able to say, well, I worked in the lab at HibTech last year, and this is how we used it, or I worked in the office at so-and-so, and this is how we used it. It's pretty exciting.
That's great. Thank you, Commissioner.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Sparks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And as you can see, this is a very exciting program. Madam Chair, I'm sorry. We're hoping that we can continue to move this bill forward. If there's no further questions, I would move that Senate File 3109 be recommended to pass and sent to state and local government. Apparently, there's some rulemaking, so I'll need to stop there and a few other places along the way.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Good job.
Senator Bach. Senate File 3271.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon, Senator Bach.
I would like to tell the committee that I'm as prepared for Senate File 3271 as I was for the Workers' Comp Advisory Council bill the other day, but I am not. You will see I've been a little busy with about a 240-page tax bill that we're going to have on the floor tomorrow. Going back about a month ago, a group of insurance companies came to see me and talked about a tax credit program where insurance companies are investing money in small businesses that I believe is active in 10 different states. And essentially what it does, it sets forth a bunch of criteria, allows insurance companies to make investments, and then the state at a future date in time provides to them a tax credit for having taken the risk that they took. So there's no state money involved. It just creates a tax credit for, I guess you could probably call them venture capitalists, for insurance companies that would be investing in small businesses. But I think Mr. Cassidy can probably explain to the committee much better than I ever could how the program works.
Good. Mr. Cassidy, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you, Senator Bach. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm of Leonard Street and Dinard in Minneapolis, and I'm here today to speak in support of the Minnesota Small Investment Act, Senate File 3271. With me today is Mr. Michael Korengold of Enhanced Capital Partners, which is an investment firm that's been working on these very programs in, like Senator Bach said, a number of other states, including the District of Columbia. The economic development tool we're about to discuss with you and under consideration today has a proven track record in many states, including New York, Texas, Missouri, and Wisconsin. It's also an economic development tool that comes at a time time where economic conditions are causing credit markets to tighten and capital is becoming scarce for many Minnesota small businesses wishing to expand and take that next big step. This proposal is fairly straightforward. The Minnesota Small Business Investment Act will channel $100 million to growing Minnesota small businesses so that they can expand their operations and grow in our state. To accomplish this, the Small Business Investment Act would have the Department of Economic Development license and regulate investment managers, such as Enhanced Capital, to go out and pool the resources of insurance companies into a $100 million investment pool. The investment managers would then invest those funds in local growing Minnesota businesses who are having a difficult time finding financing from traditional sources, such as their local banker. Investment managers would be required by this proposal to target investments to small and medium-sized businesses, businesses with less than 100 employees and with 60% of their employment base in Minnesota, with operations based in Minnesota. In exchange for the insurer providing the initial capital, as Senator Bach pointed to, the insurer would receive a tax credit against their premium tax obligation. This wouldn't kick in for 5 years until 2013, but only after all the funding has been raised, the entire $100 million, and certain other criteria and threshold have been met. The tax credits may be forfeited if investment managers do not invest entire fund in qualified investments in a timely manner. Another important point to remember is that the investment managers are not allowed to take any profits until 100% of their investment funds have been invested in a targeted qualified Minnesota small businesses. This program has a proven track record that has succeeded in other states and has been improved upon over the years. Texas recently reauthorized $200 million in tax credits after the success of an initial $200 million certified capital tax credit program initiated in 2004. New York has now reauthorized this very same program 4 times. I have with me today Mr. Michael Korngold, who would like to elaborate further on the specifics of the program and answer any questions you have. I hope that you also have time to indulge us with 2 other witnesses who have actually participated in this program and can speak from their one who has participated in this program in the state of Wisconsin. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions? Anybody have questions? I have a question, Mr. Cassidy. Why is it that the businesses are insurance companies? Couldn't it be any business? What brought you together as insurance companies?
I'll let Madam Chair, I'll let Mr. Korngold get more into that, but I think it's number one, it's where you go where the money is. Number two is insurance companies pay premium taxes in states, and this is a tool for them to make investment and to offset their premium tax obligation in the state.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
And Madam Chair, that kind of then leads to a question I have about the premium tax. I see that's how it's they're going to get a 20% credit. Is the department weighing in on this, or the Department of Commerce, or anybody? Does that go right into the general fund?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cassidy.
Senator Scheid, we have met with officials from the Department of Commerce, the Department of Revenue, and Department of Economic Development. The Commerce Department has not taken a position on this bill. I think the best way to characterize with people that we've met with is enthusiasm, and I think obviously the tax credit is something that will be discussed as it goes through the process, and probably the most controversial piece of this because it costs money.
And Madam Chair, I was going to ask.
Excuse me. Answer your question. Premium taxes do go into the general fund.
Senator Scheid.
And Madam Chair, that begs the question of the tax chair. I mean, I'm just curious. I certainly don't have any objection to the bill, and I understand that I didn't quite understand the bill when I first saw it, and I thought, oh, my goodness, we have insurance companies weighed in. But I think that they have, and this is fine. This is just an opportunity. It's not a mandate or anything like that.
Absolutely not.
And
Madam Chair, I think it would be a good idea
Senator
for the
Bach.
Commerce Committee to look at it. I certainly don't object to that if the Commerce Committee wants to see it.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure we need to. I thought maybe we should, but I think we don't need to. So, but I suspect the Tax Committee will, and I was just curious as to...
Senator Bach, I had that question, too. I wondered if the Tax Committee was going
to... this bill costs $80 million. Even in the Tax Committee, that's a lot of money. So it is in the out years, but very expensive.
Yes. Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, just to reemphasize on the tax credit issue and on the investment issue, number one, this is a completely voluntary program as it relates to insurers. Insurers can choose or choose not to invest in this program. Number two, the tax credits do kick in, but they kick in 5 years from now in 2013 and only over 4 years, so it's actually $20 million a year of the $80 million. And third, if you have any concerns about retaliatory provisions, there is no retaliation on this type of program and the offset of the taxes.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other witnesses will call forward.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Korngold. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Baca, are you taking this in taxes or am I taking this in finance?
I think, Madam Chair, there are some fees, some registration fees that are paid to deed. So I do think there's a reason for the Finance Committee to see it before the Tax Committee.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. I'm happy to be here. My name is Michael Korngold. I'm the President of Enhanced Capital Partners. We're a firm that's participated in this program in a variety of other states that have adopted it. I'm born and raised from St. Louis Park, and I've always thought that Minnesota was the perfect state for this program. As I've watched other states around the country with, in many ways, less of a diversified economy, adopt this program as a way to solve the problem of how to get capital to small businesses in their state, businesses that are too small and not yet bankable, but states that have some, but businesses that have an idea and without that initial capital are going to have to go elsewhere to grow their businesses. Those states have adopted it, and the states that have tended to reauthorize and reallocate additional tax credits time and time again. One correction to Mr. Cassidy. New York's actually done this program 5 times. Texas adopted this program for the first time in 2005 for $200 million, and it's worked so well in that short intervening period that just last month they authorized another $200 million to go into the program. The states that have continued to do that have all benefited from this timing mismatch that exists between the time that the capital goes into small businesses, which is immediately, and the time that the tax credits actually are available to the insurance company investors. And so in this case, we would have $100 million available for small businesses in Minnesota, 25% of which are located in greater Minnesota. And those investments would be made immediately. The job creation that comes from those investments as the businesses grow occurs in the intervening several years before the first tax credit hits. And so the studies that are done for these programs have shown time and time again that the benefits from the revenue enhancement that accrues from the job creation more than pays for the ultimate tax credit impact. And in some states, that's several times over, which is why states subsequently come back and reauthorize additional programs.
Mr. Korngold, I notice on page 3 of this bill where you list what types of businesses that you'd invest in, and you call out insurance, oil and gas exploration, direct gambling activities. How is it that you identified these particular?
Those are the businesses that we're not allowed to invest in.
Okay.
The thought is that there are certain businesses that should not benefit from any kind of subsidy. Real estate development is going to occur without a subsidy. Oil and gas exploration, particularly in a place like Texas, that's going to continue to exist. There's no state tax credit that needs to encourage that type of investment.
Got it.
So those are the exclusions.
So you would be able to invest. You would invest in green economy type manufacturing,
exactly.
And that would be a target. And can I also ask what interest rate differential would be from your company versus a venture capital firm?
So what differentiates us from a conventional venture capital firm is that it's really more small business finance, and it's a whole range. So in some cases, there might be a very small business that can expand by buying some additional equipment, doesn't want to give up equity, which is typically how a venture capital investment is structured, and we can make a loan to that business. But other businesses may be earlier, they may not have the ability to borrow money and repay it, and we can make an equity investment. What tends to differentiate us is that we'll make very small investments, and one of the problems is that even a promising business oftentimes can't raise $500,000 or $1 million. If they've got a plan that can command $5 or $10 million, they might be able to go to one of the coasts. But there's a huge need for that $1 million business expansion. And that's the role that we play.
Mr. Krongold, but specifically with regard to my question about how do your interest rates as you loan money compare to a venture capital?
They don't typically compare to venture capital on interest rates. We'd be more similar to a bank.
That's what I'm asking.
On a loan. And then if we are making an equity investment, then it's just a question of determining what the value of the business is. And again, you know, nobody's forced to take this capital. So we look at hundreds and hundreds of businesses. We first qualify them to make sure, yep, they're located in the state, they've got their payroll here, and then we'll work like any investment firm would on trying to get to a deal with that business that makes sense. And you know, then it's just a arm's length transaction.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. What I find very hopeful is that we just had this discussion, Madam Chair, about things we couldn't do, and you now come with a program that has some resources, perhaps, to help some of these areas. So I really thank you for doing that. And what my question was is that we talked yesterday, and Mr. Cassidy was noting that perhaps there will be some discussions about targeting a certain percentage of this pool of dollars to a specific you know, area, be it emerging technologies, bioscience. Has that happened in other states? And I think that's where we see the growth, where we want to have the growth.
Right.
But is that something that would restrict you if that happened, or would it help us in Minnesota perhaps ensure that some of these companies that are not qualifying for dollars in other areas would be the recipients?
Senator, there are really two forms of restrictions in the bill. One is the geographic restriction I touched on already, which would be 25% of this pool would go to greater Minnesota, and low-income communities are included in that definition. The other form of restriction is the type of restriction you're talking about. We have a section of the bill that forces all the participants in the program, which hopefully my firm would be one, there'd probably be, you know, half a dozen total participants, making different investments, kind of competing against one another. And we would have to take a portion of the capital returned from any of our investments and reinvest it in one idea is the university's incubator system.
Mm-hmm.
One idea is the angel network that exists throughout the state. And another idea would be to target it specifically towards the bioscience corridor. And we've also met with folks who represent that group, and they've been very supportive because if you look at other states even that haven't targeted or restricted, just by virtue of where investments tend to go, a lot of investment dollars are flowing into those ideas.
Okay.
And if I may, perhaps that's the perfect segue. If time permits, we have two other witnesses. One is John Nice, who participated in the program in Wisconsin and can talk a little more to actually that targeting. And then one is Lou Zeidner, who is an entrepreneur in Minnesota, who can also address the need.
Senator Rosen and then Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we let you go,
yes.
Mr. Krongold, I believe this is a very important initiative, and I had a chance to talk with you earlier. My question is, though, the determination of why just 25% of the funds would go out in greater Minnesota, and is that the standard that's all across the nation? Is that something that's been developed? Because the industries that you're looking at all are all across the state. And I realized Chairman Metzen mentioned all the jobs loss in the – there you are, Chairman Metzen in his area and in the cities. But I do know that the seven-county metro is slated to grow by 1 million people in the next 10 years. So it's just as important to keep the greater Minnesota viable and thriving also. So my question is the 25%.
Mr. Krongold.
Senator, the 25% is somewhat of a standard that has been used in other states. The best example is in Colorado. The perception was that there was more adequate capital available in Denver, but rural Colorado didn't have it. A 25% of that, it's a $100 million program in Colorado. 25% of that program has to go into rural Colorado businesses. What we added to this program was we added the concept of low-income communities, which is a federal definition that allows for capital to also go into areas that may not otherwise meet a rural definition. The reality is that while that's a floor, that historically has not been the ceiling. what we do is we invest in the best businesses that we can find throughout the states and throughout the state. And in many times, we've actually exceeded the 25% floor simply because that's where we find the business. That's just the minimum mandated that has to go into businesses located in those areas.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
That was my question.
Okay, I think, John, if you speak.
Thank you. I want to thank the committee members for the opportunity to testify today about the importance of capital availability.
Could you please say your name for the record?
Yes, I'm John Nice. I'm managing director of Venture Investors LLC. We're a venture capital firm based in Madison, Wisconsin, based in the University Research Park in Madison. And I specifically am here to talk about the Small Business Investment Company Credit and advocate its support. Our firm is principally focused on tech transfer opportunities out of major research universities in the Midwest. And I think one of the beauties of this program is that multiple funds get formed with differing strategies, trying to fill different gaps in the capital availability in the marketplace. Now, you may ask yourself why a venture capitalist from Madison is up here to advocate a bill if you're competing for jobs and company recruitment here in Minnesota with Wisconsin. Well, quite simply, we don't view it as a competition in my industry. It's a collaboration. We need to increase the total amount of capital availability in the region. Our firm looks throughout the Midwest. We've done investments here in Minnesota, in companies like Acceleration over in Eden Prairie. But the venture capital industry is very much a cottage industry where it's a hands-on form of investing. And you really need local capital involvement to help companies along in their development process. We typically serve as a lead investor in the markets in which we have our offices located, Madison, Wisconsin, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and then look for local lead investors in other communities and follow them into the transactions that they lead. Minnesota has a rich venture capital tradition, but as many of those firms have achieved success, they've grown tremendously in scale. They've opened offices in Silicon Valley, and with the larger amounts of capital under management, they're serving national markets and making much larger investments at much later stages in development. That ends up leaving a gap in many sectors that were previously served by those firms when they were earlier in their development. And without the early stage capital, you know, it's really hard to germinate the seeds of the next companies that are going to really advance the Minnesota economy. We managed a pool of capital under a very similar program in Wisconsin that was formed in 1999, and it was really transformative to our firm. We were actually formed in 1985. We had very small amounts of capital. It is very difficult to raise a first-time fund, so that next generation of venture capitalists here in Minnesota are going to have a very difficult time raising their money. First-time funds don't have a track record. And then if you have the double whammy of being outside the main venture capital corridors of the East and West Coast, it is very difficult to get institutional investors to invest in your fund. Beauty of this program, it is tapping into a totally different pool of capital with the insurance companies and offering them an incentive to take that risk for new fund formation in this part of the country. Our firm, in its early years, our first fund was $7 million. Our second fund was $15 million. We were having a challenging time attracting the capital that would enable us to take on the scale of opportunity that we knew was available in the backyard of the nation's second-largest research university at University of Wisconsin-Madison. In 1999, the legislation was passed in Wisconsin. And we teamed up with Advantage Capital, who had run similar programs around the country, and they raised $16.7 million. We paired that up with a small traditional fund that we raised of $37 million, and it gave us almost triple the scale of capital to start to put to work. That fund made its first investment on March 31st, 2000. Now, most people remember that date because that was when the whole tech bubble started to burst, when we were starting a big economic downturn, and you would think it was not a good time to invest. Now, most of these companies are there in their infancy, and we thought it was a great opportunity to invest at that point in time. Despite initiating investments at that time, we've delivered some tremendous results for the state of Wisconsin. I will only give you the data. Both of the funds, the two side-by-side funds, perform similarly, but I'm only going to share with you the data from the fund that was supported with the tax credits, because it is information that is verifiable by the Wisconsin Department of Commerce from our reporting to them. We invested in 10 companies, $15 million. We will invest in one more company out of the fund. So it was an average of $1.5 million per company. And in 9 out of the 10 cases, we were the first institutional money into the companies. 4 of the companies, our first investment enabled them to commence operations. They had no actual operations prior to that. 7 out of 10 were spin-outs of the University of Wisconsin. Today, 9 out of 10 of the companies are still in existence. The $15 million that we invested, we were able to syndicate and attract other investors, because now there was the local lead investor who was actively engaged in helping these companies grow. We've attracted $405 million in equity financing into those 10 companies, an average of $40 million per company. The companies in aggregate had 201 employees at the time of the initial investment, an average of 20. They have 1,001 employees today, so a fivefold increase in employment. One of the companies went public, Tomotherapy. It was a company that we backed in 2001. 2 years before they recorded their first revenue, they recorded they're a public company today, had $232 million in revenue last year, and are projected to grow about 30% in the coming year. Another company was acquired by a Fortune 50 company, Cardinal Health, back in 2003. Cardinal Health, it was their first operations in the state of Wisconsin, and they not only maintained operations, but they've expanded their operations there. 4 have constructed very specialized manufacturing facilities in the state. So we've delivered tremendous, tremendous results and very significant revenue back to the state of Wisconsin with the program. And this is data from just one of the 3 funds that were operating in Wisconsin with $16.7 million in credits. So we believe it's a net revenue positive, and particularly with the way the program's structured here today, with a delay in the tax credits, it gives the investors an opportunity to generate a lot of economic activity, start the flow of revenue back into the state before the first tax credit kicks in. We've been able to transform that success into growth of our fund. We just closed on a $117 million fund and are expanding our operations significantly in Wisconsin. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be glad to answer any questions about what we've achieved in Wisconsin with this program.
The success stories you mentioned, and this kind of fills a niche that I think, in my banking experience, there's a gap out there and a need for in this area. So do we have to any further? I don't think we need any more witnesses, Senator Bach, unless I think we've got, the way I understand, a couple more stops, don't we, finance and then the tax committee?
Right.
So
we'll continue to work on it.
Well, scrutinize this bill, but Senator Scheid.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'd feel more comfortable if I heard from the insurance industry, but I'm fine with this. I don't think this needs to come, but I'd.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody's here. I didn't see anybody, but I'm assuming that they. You know, I suppose argument could be made, well, if you don't need the tax, then why are we paying such high premium tax? I'm not sure. But, you know, I don't know what arguments against it would be.
In many respects, what you have are institutional investors that are located outside the state who are paying taxes because of the premium tax. And it's a way to attract capital from outside the state to invest in Minnesota because they happen to be taxpayers here with the premium taxes. That's why it's really designed for them, and it's creating an investment vehicle that is compatible with their obligations as insurance companies. I mean, they're not traditionally big investors in venture capital, and the tax credit makes it a very attractive vehicle for them.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm fine with that.
That's fair, and I do believe there's an amendment that will help us avoid going to judiciary.
Oh.
Good, good idea. Senate Counsel, are you aware of that?
Okay, who... at all. All right. This is what the
author, well, any questions on this A1 amendment?
Chairman, I've moved the A1
Senator
amendment.
Bach moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 3271 as amended by anybody in the audience feel like they should be heard on this issue? Okay, Senator Bach, we're ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 3271 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. And on that, members, I was real honest with the people who brought me this. I'm not sure we can do this year, knowing the uncertainty of the economy, that we can push some additional money out into the tails. But I do think it's a good discussion for us to start to have about, we do have a problem with job growth in this state, and we probably do have a niche in our state where we've got some small businesses that have good ideas, and they just can't get going. So I think it's an important discussion to have. I don't know if $100 million is the right number in this environment. I suspect it might be less than that for us to get started, but I thought it was an intriguing idea that we should have a discussion about.
Do we need an amendment? Well, you know what the...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Saltzman.
You know, on that note, Senator Bach, it would be interesting when you have that discussion to look at some of the track records of other states, because we do look at it as an expense. However, where is the growth? And I think that's where if we can... start to look at things in that light, that we really are going to lose jobs if we don't keep them here in Minnesota. So if there's some data that can help make the case that in the long run it's an expense, but what additional revenue may be coming in or would be coming in as a result of those jobs growing here in Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, the Tax Committee takes issuing tax credits very seriously, and when we do that, we expect there to be some return to the state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I, for one, appreciate Senator Bakke bringing this forward. We're looking under every rock we can in this state now, and particularly this community or committee, how to grow some jobs. And every part of the puzzle, like this part, makes us think. And Senator Sparks had a bill a little earlier that gets us thinking, too, that would create some job opportunities. So I applaud you for bringing this forward. But odd any further discussion on the Bach motion to Finance Committee? Has a minute. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. We have a very – I think we have to get out of here by, I believe, 2:45, but we have a very important bill coming up Senate File 3115, the Jobs E program standard business subsidy agreement requirement. It's part of the discussion we had a couple weeks ago, and we had to patch some stuff up. And this also includes additional seed money to the program. So it's very far-reaching, and I think it's going to be good stuff, but
yes.
Senator Rosen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yeah, this is Senate File 3115 is basically the work from the department, deed, and Senate Council on the recommendations that came out of the legislative auditor's report, which I will be honest, it's time to get this thing cleaned up. It's time to get this program working correctly, efficiently, thoroughly, and because it is an important tool out in greater Minnesota and has been used effectively. But if there's been problems, we want to make sure that we take care of it. So I want to thank the legislator's auditor on their recommendations, and we did take those very serious.
Senator Rosen, do we have a delete everything amendment that
we have two amendments, actually.
Discuss it in the room.
Mr. Chair, I have the A8 amendment that will put the bill into the form that it needs to be done.
A08?
1219.
Okay, I think we're going to adopt that to get the bill in the shape that she'd like to work off of. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those, motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
I've got it already.
The amendment basically addresses all the issues that were raised in the report, as I said. And in your packet, you have a long sheet that probably looks familiar from a couple weeks ago. But it also, now the deed did fill this out as far as what was accomplished in this bill in Senate File 3115. So you can go through this long, long sheet here and make sure that everything was addressed. But basically, going back to some of the issues in the auditor's report, the program did not focus on the intended goals for job creation in economically distressed greater Minnesota. The business subsidy agreement that with the local government that met employment and capital investment targets was very inconsistent and not thorough. And the administrative part from the Job Z was a little bit need a lot of work coming out of the department. So those are the things that are addressed in this chart and in this bill. So in Senate File 3115, this bill would basically on the section 3, the state review, it would develop a specific state level review criteria, which I think is very important. And it also in section 4 would establish a standardized business subsidy agreement all across the board. And the commissioner of deed would have the would either approve or deny any of these agreements before that was lacking. The focus of this program, again, would be in the economically distressed areas, but this would also be tied with recommendations for extending the duration of the program. There is also a review in page 9 of section 2, article 2, section 2, which would review the business obligations and compliance and make them more tightened and timely. And if the business was out of compliance, deed now has the option of removing them from the program. And in article 2, page 10, would create limited conditions with deed and the Department of Revenue, which would allow a business which has fallen short of its obligations or capital investment goals or job creation to remain in the program with a shorter duration of benefits. It also clarifies who an employer for the Job Z purposes is. They would have to be eligible for unemployment insurance. And it gives the state auditor access to unemployment insurance and revenues tax information to perform to these compliance obligations. And Mr. Chair, with that, I do have an oral amendment I'd like to take care of for the state auditor. On section 4, line 1412, I'd like to delete the words tax increment financing. Oh, excuse me, tax increment financing investment and finance division of the.
Where does that fit in, article 4? No.
It would be page 14. Line 12, and they'd like to delete the tax increment financing investment and finance division of the, and then stop. So it would read, the state auditor must annually audit the creation
The office of the state auditor.
I'd like to move that oral amendment, please.
Any discussion on that amendment? The state auditor has approached us on this, and I think it's the
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bach.
How do we reimburse the auditor for those costs? Is that under Senator Betzel's committee? Or
I think that's under his jurisdiction, I believe.
Commissioner of Revenue and Tax.
Is he the governor's office?
Yeah, I think it is, but sometimes around here we don't have to pay people for doing just a little more work, do we? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of.
Is it?
Talking about a lot of mandatory audits, and I think we need to find out from them what the cost of that is and if they're willing to absorb that or.
Well, I have a state auditor, right? What's it? Is it existing law now? Welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Rebecca Otto, the state auditor, and we did get an appropriation for this last time, so we have had money appropriated for us to do this work.
Well, there you go. Senator Bach.
Is it an ongoing appropriation, or is it just for the last one?
Is it an ongoing? Did you hear the question?
I mean, I'd have to carry out the audits if the legislature someday didn't make an appropriation for you to do it.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I don't know if it's ongoing. I know that we had it for the biennium, and it's really not, well, it's money, but it's not a substantial amount of money. It's going to be very limited staff. So.
Well, I think the auditor is saying that we can do it with the.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important.
Yeah, it's important, but what bothers me, and I said this an hour or two ago, that every time we add a job, even if it's a little, kind of a bigger job, I need 8 more people. I need 12 more people. Some departments, I'm not sure what you have 1,800, 2,000 people. So they come in, you give us another assignment, Mr. Senator or Mrs. Senator, we need 7.5 more people. Well, damn it, do it with the people you have. And, you know, is that too tough to say? Maybe it is. Senator Day, I know he agrees with me on this, right? And the auditor nodded and said, right. We got to
Mr. Chair.
Not tax and spend all the time. Find ways to set an auditor, Senator Auditor Otto.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and committee members. I did want to say that we run an incredibly efficient office, that people do not sit and twiddle their thumbs. And, you know, seriously, we've built in as many efficiencies as we can.
Good.
It's very difficult to get all the work done that we have to get done. However, we have a great team. And for this particular work, we have to have cubicle space within our office. We need a computer. We have to build a database. So there are some costs involved in doing it. But we tried to keep it as slender as we could to keep the cost down. And hopefully we'll be able to do some good work
That's
for
what
you
we'd
with
like
that.
To
so.
Hear, right? Okay. Senator Tabasoni, you're ready to visit with us, I think, aren't you? No.
Well, I was just going to point out, Mr. Chairman, that I once had a 23-page amendment, so this 17- or 18-page amendment is pretty impressive. Actually, so, to a two-page bill.
Okay, we got that amendment on. Are we? Yeah, fine. Thank you, Auditor.
We haven't done it yet.
Otto? Ms. Otto?
Did we do the amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Did we do that?
No. I don't remember voting.
No, we didn't do it yet.
Okay. That's this one.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And
the verbal
we
one.
Change one word, did we?
Struck words. And
office.
Words.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
on the amendment, all those in favor.
Yeah, we actually changed quite a few words.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Prevails. Senator Rosen, you may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then we go to Article 4, which is on page 14, and that's the Regional Emerging Business Investment Tax Credit, and it really fits in line well with what we've been talking in these previous bills. And this deals with the governor's seed program and creates new angel investment programs to stimulate investment in early growth companies. Most of the certified funds would be in Greater Minnesota, 20 funds total, and there would be 5 in the metro. It's actually patterned off after the MinCor program that's been very successful in this area. The qualifying businesses would be biotech, manufacturing, agriculture, processing and assembling products, conducting research and development of new product or business processes. That's what the language says. With me, Mr. Chair and members, I do have Mr. Mark Loftness with the department who could go further and answer some questions if there are.
there. So.
You're from the South St. Paul area, Mr. Loftus?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Oh, this is some wonderful
Does that make a difference?
Some great Loftus families. And, I should say yes if you want the bill.
Sure, yes, I absolutely. Long history there.
Welcome to the committee,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Loftus. Do you want to talk?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Loftus from Deed. I would only add to what Senator Rosen said is that we are making a number of administrative changes as well that don't necessarily show up in statute. Things like improving substantially the business assistance form that reports on the data so we have good data to work with, and also making administrative changes internally so that we focus our staffing in the right way without additional staff, but using staff more appropriately aligned to the task at hand with Job Z. So.
Okay. Continue on, son. Who does? Back. Where is he? Also, he's to my left over there, yeah. Senator Bach, excuse me.
Senator Rosen, if these provisions are all incorporated into law, would it be possible for a business to gain Job Z status and create no new jobs? Is there such a thing still permitted under the program that you could enter into a business subsidy agreement, a business could get this preferential tax treatment for 12 years and create no
Mr. Chair and
Rosa.
Senator Bach, no, that's not possible. And the amendment that I gave you to take a look at has not been passed out. Deals with that issue to make a minimum of five jobs for any company that wants to, I believe, is it relocate or move into the state? I can't remember.
You've got something in there that if they don't perform it, goes away too, though, doesn't it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, maybe the department can help me.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, under current business subsidy law, I believe it is technically possible to create zero jobs under a business subsidy agreement. As we administer the program, we will, among other things that are part of our administration, is to examine the proposed jobs, both created and retained, the capital investment that would be part of the proposed project. And we will have specific job commitments that will likely be above zero. I can't say that the statute requires that now, but in our examination of the project, we will be looking at the level of the Job Z benefits that they are proposed to receive, that they're expected to receive, and whether the job creation and investment is commensurate with the level of the benefits. So that cost-benefit analysis is going to be part of our assessment. And I dare say that the chances of having zero job creation in that equation, in that determination, is probably very small.
Mr. Chairman, is it Senator possible? Bach. I mean, could it happen?
Mr.
The
Chairman,
the department
Senator
drafted
Bach.
All this language, so I think the department knows the answer. Is it possible that we still could have business subsidy agreements for one reason or another that have zero job growth?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, technically, under statute, I believe it is still possible. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, can we fix that?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems a minimum threshold of creating five new jobs to get 12 years of tax exemption just doesn't seem like that big a hurdle to get over.
Okay, can you?
But if we can't
that?
Do it here, maybe we can do it in the tax committee someday. But that is one of the loopholes I think needs to be closed, this idea that somebody can get 12 years of tax exemption and create no new jobs. I think apparently, under the department's language, not Senator Rosen's, that's still possible. That still troubles me.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, and I certainly do not want to give Senator Bach any heartburn, and he's correct on that. I think that
Why
is something
not?
That needs to be, well, because he's got
heartburn
tomorrow.
Heartburn,
but I do believe that is something that is we do need to work at, and actually Mike Hickey brought an amendment, which I did not move to put on this bill yet. I wanted to talk it through with the commissioner and the department.
Okay.
But I do think it's reasonable, and perhaps the commissioner has something to say about it also. But I don't think that's a problem. If it makes the bill and makes the program better, Mr. Loftus said, though, there will be strict oversight, which has been greatly needed in this program. And I doubt if there is going to be one or less job opportunities brought forth. But if it if it's a comfort level,
well, let's just do it.
Let's do it,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Loftus,
Commissioner and I were just conferring, and we are open to the possibility of a threshold such as five jobs, and we will consider that as we pursue that with the tax committee.
Let's be more than open to it.
I think that I don't think that's unreasonable. I'm surprised we're here with all that, because I thought that was one of the points of the legislative auditor's report, is that one of the criticisms that there were business subsidy agreements with no new jobs in them.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Bach, I do believe the commissioner would like to say something.
Commissioner McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, because the commissioner would have the authority and the obligation to approve or disprove a transaction, I can't imagine approving a transaction that didn't have new jobs. But if I give you the hypothetical of Minnesota's last brick company has closed, the city tried hard to put together a transaction to sell it to new owners and to preserve some 200 jobs that would have kept Oaks Brick operating in Minnesota, and they weren't able to put it together, and Oaks Brick has closed. At some time in the future, if there were a transaction like that that was intended to keep a company open or reopen a company, I think we should draft the language you have in mind very carefully. But in 99.99% of circumstances, I can't imagine a circumstance where you wouldn't be creating new jobs. But it was the Oaks Brick case that led me to believe that there may be a rare occurrence where that would happen.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, thank you. I think we can come up with some language that I think everybody could agree to, but and I'd be happy to take a look at that when we get.
All right. Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, I agree. I believe we can accomplish that.
Well, we like to do that work here, but we'll take everybody's word for it and make sure that this gets done.
We'll commit to work on that language, okay. Mr. Chairman, and we'll provide your staff a copy.
With that understanding, good. That's a good question, Mr. Senator Bach. Mr. Rosen, how far along? We're getting pretty done here.
Mr. Chair, I am done, and if there's no further questions for me or the department, I'd
like to... No, don't get too anxious. No. This is a major piece of that, yes, and you've done a lot of, well, it took a lot of cleanup work. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question for the department, maybe. Under Section 2 and the breach of agreements, would that be for businesses moving forward, or would that be applicable to individuals or businesses that have taken advantage of the Job Z program thus far?
Senator Rosen or Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sparks, which line are you looking at?
Page 9, Section 2 talks about the breach of agreements that would continue to operate in the zone. I'm just curious if that would be from new businesses that take advantage of it. Would it apply to people that have done it currently?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sparks, that does apply to those existing agreements that we already may have in place, and for those that maybe fall short just a shade of their compliance. Yes.
Yep. Thank you.
Further questions by members of the committee? Anybody in the audience feel they should be heard? Come on up. Thank you. I'll find a chair. Maybe to your right over there. Pull one of those up.
Go ahead. Okay, thanks. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee, my name's Peter Berkland. I'm the CFO of Rainsource Capital, formerly MinCorp, here to talk about the Angel Investment Credit and to give you a little background on our network. What Rainsource Capital does is we build equity capacity for local businesses in rural communities. We are a series of formal investment funds that pool intellectual and financial resources of accredited individual investors throughout Minnesota and five other states. Currently, we have 24 RAIN funds operating in six states, representing approximately $22 million in capital raised. In Minnesota, we have 12 of these funds established in communities throughout the state, and we are looking to expand. We have approximately 200 members, and we have over $9 million in capital commitments. These funds have made investments of over $3.5 million in 33 companies, and we are in the process of analyzing approximately 20 investments. And just as a side, we are actually drawing investment capital of South Dakota into Minnesota companies. So if the committee has any questions for me about the credit or our funds or how they operate, I'd be willing to take those.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Somebody else, we do have to get out of here in about 5 minutes. I'd like to, Senators. Bach, did you have another question?
Mr. Chairman, to the witness, maybe, do we know what the cost of the tax credit is? Taxpayer is allowed a credit on page 18.
Mm-hmm.
Deal what that's going to cost.
Excuse me.
McElroy or whoever. <It's
smart>. I thought we were fixing job Z, Mr. Chairman, but I think we're doing more than that.
Yeah, we are doing more than that. It's
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, the governor's supplemental budget, which will be out on Friday, will in its tax section propose $3 million in tax credits for Section 4 of this bill.
Section 2.
Sir, do you have a short story to tell?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members, you've raised some very interesting Tom Willett, and I'm the Economic Development Director for the City of North Branch. And you've raised some really interesting issues on Job Z, and I'm kind of in a unique position in that I returned to the state in 2002 to my hometown, Jackson, 3500, near Fairmont. And so in a very rural area, the Job Z program is an interesting story in that Ag Chem, that was a little entrepreneurial company that grew to employ hundreds of people in our community, then was bought out by AgCo. And with Job Z, we took the Challenger tractor operations from DeKalb, Illinois, that were probably going to Heston, Kansas, and they ended up in Jackson. And then subsequently, they've added a lot of additional employees. In Cambridge, in 2004, and this is the issue that was raised in terms of creating additional jobs, Cambridge Metal and Plastics was going to be closed within 60 days by Leggett and Platt. We would lose 100 jobs there, which was over 12% of our employment base in manufacturing. With the Job Z program, we took a company that had been looking at Cambridge, even with Job Z, had decided to go to Princeton because of a lower lease rate, and ended up buying out that company within 60 days. We also had two local companies that expanded operations. It took 2 years to do that. They didn't just lightly say, oh, we get Job Z, let's expand. They took 2 years to make that financial decision, and we bought an Italian company to the United States who for the first time will produce parts for Polaris and Arctic Cat. In addition to that, in North Branch, I think you're aware of Anderson Windows that was going to Wisconsin, and we've got a small, somewhat startup company, I would call it, with about 12 jobs that's taking advantage of Job Z. I think it's
okay, that's good. That's good success story, and even with the problems we've had with Job Z, there were some good
There's good stories out there.
Good stories, too. So I think we're about ready to vote.
Mr. Chairman, just Senator Rosen, is there a cost to this bill?
Is there a what?
Is there a cost?
Only Article 4, Mr. Chairman. Senator, $3 million in tax credits, income tax credits.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomas, so this is just cleaning up the language and making sure that it runs more efficiently.
Yeah, but it's got to go to taxes, though, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think it needs to come to finance, though.
Probably just taxes. We'll see what happens. We'll go to taxes first.
Okay.
Senator Rosen, you want to make
a... Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 3115 be recommended to pass and...